You are now listening to the Hunter's Advantage Podcast. We preserve the history and sport of hunting through curious conversation and action-packed hunts, as well as offering you tips and strategy for more successful hunts. Welcome to Deer Science Month.
The goal of this series is to break down the science behind the different senses of a white-tailed deer to make us better hunters.
We're going to be talking to some of the best deer biologists across the country about topics like deer vision, smell, hearing, taste, and we'll even throw in cool topics like, does culling deer actually work? The difference between CWD and EHD, and we'll talk about some GPS collar research. So anything you want to know about deer science and biology, hopefully we're going to cover it in this series. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Hunter's Advantage Podcast. I was going to say what episode this was, but I don't know because we're recording this a little early. But today we are joined by Matt Ross of the National Deer Association. You're the Director of Conservation. Thanks for joining us for the third time. I think we were talking about before the episode, like the third time or fourth time you've been on. So really appreciate it.
Well, we really appreciate you having the National Deer Association on, whether it was me or any of the other people that represent our organization. It's really nice to have a friend like yourself that wants to promote our organization and what we do and learn a little bit about deer, right? Who doesn't like to learn about deer?
Oh, absolutely. If you're listening to this podcast, you definitely like learning about deer.
So would you say you're probably the best deer hunter in the NDA? Would you go that far?
Oh, I would definitely go that far. I am the best deer hunter within the National Deer Association that lives in New York State. How's that?
Narrowing it down. Acceptable. That's awesome. Cool. We wanted to bring you on for our Deer Science Month. This is a four-week series that we're doing. You're week two. And the topic that we wanted to cover with you this week was white-tailed deer vision. It's fascinating. I know a lot of people want to know more about it. How can we take advantage of it as hunters? But before we get into that, can you give us a little bit of background into maybe your hunting experience, your education, and then kind of how you ended up at the National Deer Association?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's a pretty interesting journey. I've been with the National Deer Association now for, this will be my 17th spring, actually 17 wow. years. The organization formerly known as Quality Deer Management Association, and I'm pretty sure the last time that I was on the podcast, that was probably the name of the organization. But yeah, I was hired in 2006. I'm from the Northeast. I live in New York State, as I just mentioned, but I've lived in a couple of the other states in the Northeast, but grew up deer hunting and really super interested in how to learn about deer for a career because of deer hunting. Deer hunting was the first thing that really I took to. You know, I played soccer and I was into sports, but as a really young kid, not even like, you know, following my dad or my uncle around the woods as is very typical with the traditional hunting background. I really just took to it and stayed laser focused on that as something that I wanted to learn more about. And eventually once I was in high school, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? I was like, I want to do something with deer. And I really like science too. So I went to school for wildlife and forestry. And I worked for our state agency for a period of time, went back to grad school and got my master's degree focused in deer. I actually picked graduate schools that actually had good programs that actually either had deer or moose or something like that and got a degree. And then after school, I worked for a private consulting company, basically giving land management advice to landowners or towns as a forester and a biologist. I did that a fair amount of time, but all of that was driven by deer hunting. And I am an avid bow hunter. I'm an avid hunter, period. I've traveled a decent amount. I've killed deer in a bunch of different states, but today I really like staying close to home because I travel quite a bit for work. Mm-hmm. And not that New York is known for its stellar trophy hunting or even great deer hunting, but I like being close to home, hunting with friends, family, kids, my kids, you know, those kinds of things. And it's all driven by that. My job with NDA has varied over the years. Of course, you're with a company that long. when I was originally hired, I worked with our volunteers throughout the Northeast and then eventually the Northeast in Canada. Then I moved into our conservation department, which is where I am now, the director of conservation. Initially, I oversaw our deer steward program, which is a training, a class people can take online or in person. Did that and developed some other programs and just kind of moved my way up into, you know, you work in a place long enough, you get opportunities. And today I oversee all of our field staff and I report to our chief conservation officer, who's Kip Adams. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Kip's been on this podcast.
Yeah, we've had Kip too.
Good. He's a phenomenal deer biologist as well. And I get to travel with Kip and we're both driven by the same desires, is just to learn more about deer. And this is a perfect month to be profiling deer science. And, you know, to bring it back home, to kind of pitch it back to you guys, you know, I think I may have taken that path of wanting to learn and go to school and follow a career, but I've never met a deer hunter that doesn't want to learn more about deer, whether they followed it as a career, right? I mean, we all do. And I love the fact that I can, for my day job and for my, you know, what we do as an organization and for my coworkers, is we get to deliver that kind of information to hunters. You know, there's all that gobbledygook science out there, which I love. I'm not going to beat it down, but how do we deliver that information into usable, you know, pieces of information that can make you a better hunter, make you more efficient, make you more successful? That's what we do.
Yeah, if you're going to be in the woods hunting deer, why not be good at it? That's how I look at it. So thanks for that that intro. It sounds like we definitely have the right guy, someone that's absolutely passionate about deer hunting. And we want to learn more about deer vision. So let's jump right into that. But before we get too deep into it, I wanted to ask kind of a more of a candid question. If you had to put a guess out there in your entire hunting career, however many years that's been, how many times have you been skyline spotted or just plain out busted because of a deer's sense of vision?
Oh, man. I can't put a number on it.
Too many?
Just be
not
too
enough
many
fingers or toes.
You know, I'll be 47 this summer. So, I mean, I've been hunting. You can start hunting in New York legally at 16, but I followed my dad earlier than that. I mean, every year that kind of things happen. It doesn't matter how good of a hunter you are. You're going to find yourself in a situation where deer came from a place you didn't expect them. And their senses, their vision is one of the senses, obviously, where they're going to pick you out. I mean, that's they have been built to survive and look for danger. And, you know, we get distracted pretty easily. So, I mean, more than once a year, I can tell you that. So more than 47 times.
That's awesome.
Well, is there something about deer vision that a lot of people kind of misunderstand, but you kind of wish was common knowledge? Like, have you noticed anything in your 47 years?
Yeah, so, you know, big picture, I was thinking before I came on here, you know, what would I say about deer vision? Their vision is not as good as people think. It is, it's adapted for specific things, and we'll talk about all the different things, but they have eyesight that is evolved or built for, you know, where they live and how they pick up danger. It's not as good as ours, you know. It's just different, I would say. So I would, you know, we all know sense of smell is, or I shouldn't say we all know, if you're listening to this and you're a new hunter, you might not know that, but their sense of smell is their number one defense. Vision is strong, hearing is strong, but honestly they don't see the same way or even as accurately or as acutely as humans do. And they hear about the same as we do. So their other senses are not like bulletproof. There are some things that we can do, and that, you know, to get back to your question, Jake, is for the people that, you know, the thing I would tell you, and this is again, if you're a seasoned hunter, you know this, don't move. Yeah. It has to do with motion. Their vision is really built to pick up movement, and all of the things that are related to movement in a stand or in a blind. Just be as still as you possibly can be. That's their safety, basically, through their vision, is picking up movement.
That makes a lot of sense. So I don't know about you. I spent a decent amount of time at the optometrist growing up. Most people know and speak in these terms of like 20/20 vision, 20/10 vision. Some people, they might know that 20/60 is bad or good, or they might be indifferent. But if you had to kind of give an overview of deer vision in the sense of like human terms, like dumb it down to where we could really understand it, how good is it? How bad is it? Kind of give us a good overview.
That's a good place to start. And you actually started in a really good thought process in comparing it to ours. So, you know, our vision is supposed to be about 20/20. Their vision is about... I don't even know what mine is. I don't wear contacts or glasses, but it's probably close to 20/20. Theirs is closer to, and it's funny you said this, Christian, is 20/60. So that means they see an object 20 feet away with the same clarity that you would see it at 60 feet away. So just think about what something looks like, the clearness and crispness of that object at 60 feet away. That's what it looks like to a deer when it's only 20 feet away. There's some haze there. They don't see it as crisply. And there's a reason for that. It's partly because of the eye structure. But you know, when it comes down to it, that clarity, they give up some of that clarity and crispness or acuteness for the other things that they need, which is the movement and things that I was talking about. The eye structure itself and the pupil, think about like a human pupil. This is really one of the direct reasons why their vision is not as sharp as ours, is their pupil is, if you've ever been up close to a horse, you know, or a pony, they have these pupils that are horizontal in shape. Like ours is a perfect circle. You know, I'm looking at you guys on the screen. You can look, if you're listening to this, if you're driving, don't look at somebody else while you're driving, but you know, look at somebody in the eye and you know that a pupil is like perfectly circular on a person. Well, theirs is horizontal. And the reason it's horizontal, it has to do with the fact that they're trying to look across a broader horizon for different things. And, you know, horses are the same way. They're both kind of from the same sort of lineage, I guess, or, you know, they're both prey animals. So that shape allows them to have a wider opening instead of a circle, of course, at times where it's low light conditions. And that's when they're the most active. Deer are most active around dawn and dusk. And if they can take in more light at that time, they have a better ability to see better at those hours than we do. Just think about what it's like when you come outside and it's, you know, dark out and you've been inside the lights, or if you've been in the woods and it's dark and you're walking into an open field, and how our eyes adjust. Well, they're trying to take in as much light as possible. So they're trying to detect that through movement, but it's basically that pupil shape that drives that clarity or sharpness.
That's really cool. I think that was a great overview. I mean, I actually have 20/10 vision, which isn't like a kind of a subtle flex, because I have really, really good vision and I know how crisp and detailed things are to me. But if I was a deer, what would I be seeing in the outside world? What colors do I see? Do I see in black and white? How would you kind of paint that picture?
That's another good question. They have, because of their activity and behavior of being most active at dawn and dusk, and because of their pupil shape, they try to pick up the colors that are most apparent in those lower light conditions. Of course, deer are active in the middle of the day and they're active in the middle of the night. They're less active at those times, though. I wrote an article last year, I think, about the best two times to you know, basically ambush a deer. And I just use that as an example to show study after study to show that deer are crepuscular, they're active at dawn and dusk. And so the colors that have these longer wavelengths of color, the reds, the oranges, you know, those types of things on, if you, every color has its own wavelength, it has its own signature, you know, almost like a picture, like the sound coming through your audio device right now. And there's this reverberation of wavelengths in sound. It's the same thing with colors, and the colors that have those longer wavelengths, oranges, reds, they appear more like browns or gray to deer. And the reason they look that way is unlike people, deer don't have a built-in UV filter in their eyes. They don't live, you know, what's the longevity or lifespan of a person compared to a deer? Deer don't live, you know, decades. In fact, if a deer lives a decade, that is an incredibly special deer that's lived that long. You know, most deer in the wild are dead at two or three. I mean, they really are not living. They're not a long-lived species. And so through evolution, they've given up the need to have and protect their eyesight through UV filters. And those UV filters are absent, which allows them to capitalize on that additional light from the shorter wavelengths. And at dawn and dusk, that's when those colors are most apparent. It might not be obvious to you or me, but when you're walking around at dawn or dusk hunting, colors like blues and purples, those colors are more vibrant. They're more able to like be picked up at those times. Mm-hmm. And so, which again are more abundant around that. So when deer are most active, they get this distinct advantage as they're moving to and from color. And deer can see those shorter wavelengths like blues nearly 20 times better than we can. So think about like a pair of blue jeans, right? What they look like to you. Now picture that in like almost a neon tone. That's what it would look like to a deer. And we have a really good article on our website that our whole staff contributed to. I did, but I wasn't the only one. And I'll refer to that a couple times through the podcast. But it's like the seven different things about deer vision. And there's a great graphic in there that shows a hunter. It's actually my coworker, Lindsay Thomas Jr., in camouflage and blaze orange, and then like it applies a color filter to it to make the blues really stand out. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you see some of these commercials about UV detergents being used on your camouflage, and you want to.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, I mean they do pick up those blues and those colors at a much more intensity, especially at dawn and dusk, and it's because of their eyesight.
That's wild. So how does depth perception kind of fall into that? Is that due to the lack of, I guess, colors they can see, or is that just how their vision's set up? Because I've heard that whitetail don't usually have like that good of depth perception, and that's why they always do that head bob when they're trying to pick you out.
Yep. So that's not necessarily directly related to the colors that they can see or the wavelengths, but it goes back to the pupil shape. You know, if you've ever made eye contact with a deer like you're talking about, Jake, with a deer, what feels like an eternity, and they're doing that head bobbing, it's likely they're trying to figure out exactly what you're looking at. That has to do with the fact that they only have 20/60 vision, first. Okay. And second, it has something to do with the rods and cones, the structure in their eye, in the back of the eye. We both have these photoreceptors in the back of our eyes, or basically in the retinas, that allow us to see different things. Those are photoreceptors are called rods and cones. Rods are responsible for light absorption, right? And cones are responsible for color vision and distinguishing those finer details that you're talking about, you know, the sharpness. And so you would imagine, based on the description that I gave a few minutes ago, deer have fewer cones because they're giving up that sharpness, and a lot more rods because they're trying to pick up light absorption properties to be able to see. You know, think about it. There's things trying to kill them, right? And they're up on their feet, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, and they're just as the sun's setting, and those 2 hours or 3 hours after sunset, they need to take in as much light as possible. And one of the cool things about the fact that they have you know, nearly 20 times more rods in their retinas than we do, and they have that horizontal pupil, they have the ability, just think about this, right? Deer, what's trying to kill a deer? Is there something? Yeah, us, right? Us, what else? Bears,
cats,
cougars, yeah. Right? Are any of these predators in the sky?
No.
No. Right? And most of them are going to be on the same playing field. They're going to be on the horizon or on the ground with the deer. We are, I mean, we might be in a tree. That gives us a little bit of advantage. And you might have a cougar that jumps out of a tree. But for the most part, their danger is going to be in front of them on the horizon. And so the combination of the horizontal pupil and way more rods than cones in their retinas, it allows them, when they're most active, to be able to almost play and have this horizontal film across, or, you know, not film, but like, you know, like a movie, being able to like scan all at the same time, although they can't see exact details, they're picking up that movement that I mentioned before. So if you pick up your gun, instead of, you know, think about it as you're reading a piece of paper. I got like a paper right here. Like, or if you're reading a book, the way that we work our eye across the page is it's like a typewriter, right? You go across. If you just look at the center of the picture or the center of the piece of paper, you can't see what the word is in the top right corner, but you see there's words there. Right. And so you have this super centered, focused clarity, and then there's like concentric rings of less and less clarity. Well, what deer see is it's not as sharp, but instead of a perfect circle, they see the whole page. They have like this vision across the horizon, and the fact that they're absorbing so much light. And I'll tell you about movement in a second. Some really cool research came out in 2000. What year was that? 16, 15, 16, about how they pick up motion. I mean, we didn't even know this until just like 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But the combination of all these adaptations, the horizontal pupil, more rods than cones, and the fact that they can basically process the information faster than we do in their brain, lets it all work together. And all you got to do is pick your nose or whatever in the stand, yeah, or, you know, in a blind. Blank. And they see it, they pick it up, or, you know, their sense of smell is picking up something before their vision does, but their sense of vision is backing it up, and they're looking for that motion, and they're doing exactly what you just said. They're bobbing their head. They're looking for that. Partly they're trying to get you to move, and partly they're trying to get a different fixture on you, changing the angle to see if they can figure out what just moved or what it was.
So basically they're pump faking you.
They are pump faking, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So whenever you talk about that horizontal view, I guess I'm trying to relate this to like a tree stand scenario, like on how high you should hang your stand, right? Because like if they have that horizontal view, and like you said, not many predators come from the sky, like what's that range that you would call, I guess, safe to hang that stand?
Oh, I don't know if there's a distance to it. I mean, I tend to like to hunt high because I think that I'm getting that advantage, but they also have this weird, and it's kind of like an interesting physiological adaptation that when they are feeding, like, so when a deer's head is up, they have that horizontal, view through their pupil. And when they're feeding, their eye does not tilt down with their head. They actually, their eyes rotate, and that's they creepy. Rotate independently from each other. So what? They each eye basically rotates to be level with the ground so that they can maintain that pupil being horizontal and parallel to the ground. It's got a fancy term. It's called cyclovergence. But basically their eyes can spin up to 50 degrees independent of each other to maintain that horizontal pupil opening, and keep that horizontal field of view open in opposite directions when they lower their heads. It's pretty nuts. So, you know, I think anything over the standard 15 feet, you're probably doing okay. But as you know, I mean, have you ever been picked out in a tree stand?
About every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've hunted in my younger years. I've hunted pretty high in climbing stands.
Oh yeah.
And I've even been picked out really, like, you know, insanely high.
Yeah.
It was one of those things that you're just like, how in the did that deer see me? I just don't know. And it's probably their sense of smell that, you know, turn them on or pick you off first before their vision. And obviously terrain is a big part of that too, because if you got deer that are coming in not quite, you know, 20 feet, 30 feet below you, whatever, however high you are, you know, they may still skyline you, like you first asked, Christian. I mean, it's, you can't prevent all of that stuff from happening. The best right. thing, the best line of defense is don't move. Just yeah. don't move. Sit still.
That's a good point, and that's a great segue, because everybody has this situation where a buck or a doe, usually a doe for me, honestly, gets me shaking yeah. like a leaf, or you're hunting with a buddy, and you know, everyone has that buddy that couldn't sit still if their life depended on it. And if you're hunting out of a saddle, that's definitely happening these days. So with that being said, how important is it to sit still, and kind of what, talk to me about motion, because I've heard about deer possibly seeing in slow motion. What's the truth to that? How does yeah. motion play into this whole scenario?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, where this research came out in 15 or 16 from a lot of the vision stuff that we've learned has come from University of Georgia. Not all of it, but there's been a lineage of successive researchers that have done stuff out of the Wornell School of Forestry and Wildlife there at University of Georgia. In 2015 or 16, a young lady that was studying under Carl Miller did a project where they were trying to determine how deer process the images that they see. And so that comes back down to the slow motion or motion that you're talking about. Even though deer have this lower sense of image sharpness that I talked about, they receive and process images nearly four times faster than we do. It's almost like they are able to see things in fast forward, or we are seeing things, you know, or, you know, they can slow it down. You think about, like, you know, the top sports athletes. This is something that when I teach people in one of our deer steward classes, I talk about, you know, some of the best baseball players, or, you know, being able to hit super high batting averages consistently, they can like slow down the ball, right? They're almost seeing it in slow motion. And that's not me, I can tell you that. But
no.
deer have this ability. They have an extremely good at detecting that slightest movement in their visual field, because their brain is basically, think about like a film is just a series of still images, right? And we watch it at a certain speed, and that's how our brain picks it up. Mm-hmm. But a deer is almost like flipping through them super fast, and seeing them at a faster rate than we can. And so all it takes is that little, you know, just little thing that you're doing, and they're like, I gotcha. You know, the first picture in that old school reel of film where you go from, you know, one stationary position to just the slightest little difference, their brain has already picked up on it. If that makes sense. I don't know if I'm yeah. explaining it right, but that's how yeah, I view it.
That's good.
Yeah.
The Hunter's Advantage podcast is powered by Out on a Limb Manufacturing. Out on a Limb is a family-owned company based right here in Oklahoma that makes tree stands, saddle platforms, climbing sticks, and so much more.
Christian, I have a quick question.
What's that?
What bites down harder, a hippo or an alligator?
No idea.
It's a trick question. The Ridge Runner 2.0 bites harder than both of them. But all jokes aside, we use these products all across the land on public or private. These help us get into any tree we want and hunt where the deer actually are.
Most men go to the grocery store for their meat, but these products help you go to God's grocery store. I have used the Out on a Limb Ridge Runner 2.0 and the Shikar Sticks for the last few years hunting public land bucks, and I've actually shot several bucks out of this setup. If you want to support the podcast and get some Out on a Limb equipment, make sure to go to outonalimbmfg.com and use code HNTA10 for 10% off at checkout. Once again, if you want to support the podcast, go to outonalimbmfg.com and use code HNTA10 at checkout for 10% off. Now let's get back to the podcast.
With that being said, then, like, so bows nowadays are pretty freaking quiet and pretty fast, right? So a lot of people say when a deer jumps a string or ducks a string or whatever, that they hear the bow go off. Is that all pure to like the ability to hear, or can they somewhat like see the arrow coming at them? If like that's what you're saying, because they process stuff super quickly. So could they maybe see the arrow like kind of come towards them, almost like if a fly is, you know, about to, or a bug's about to hit us in the face, we can kind of barely see it. Obviously with our reflexes, it's too slow, but yeah, maybe for deer being the schizos that they are, that they might be able to dodge it.
I think there's something to that. That's a good question and thought. I mean, obviously there's no bow out there that goes faster than the speed of sound. And so they're probably hearing the sound first. I've killed a bunch of deer with my bow, and I can think of instances, I'm just trying to like play through the Rolodex of harvest that I've had with my bow, where the deer, you know, it was a nice steady shot where the deer's broadside, and you would think that they would see it because they're not facing away, and they did not react at all. And then there's been times where the deer had its head turned that I can think of, and it did react. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I don't think there's any equal thing across all situations where you would say that is a standard thing that happens. But is it possible? I do think it's possible because, I can see my arrow.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm shooting at a target, or not even at a deer, I mean, I can see my arrow before it hits the target. It would have to be a pretty far shot. Obviously, if you're shooting things at like 15, 20 yards or closer, it's hard to see it, but you can still watch it through the peep, you know, as you're maintaining that visual picture of where your arrow is going to go. I'm watching the knock.
Yeah.
So I think they can see it.
Well, I've had situations where I've had buddies shoot at like 70 yards and I've stood on the other side of the house where there's absolutely no way it would hit me. And it's crazy. You think it's going so fast, but when you get down range of it, it's like you can hear it coming as soon as they shoot, and I can literally watch it go to the target. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that wasn't nearly as fast as I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's part one of the lines of defense that you can do there is obviously pick close shots, not take super long shots, but that's not always
it depends conducive. How big the deer is. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say that, but that is true. It depends on how big the deer is. It depends on the situation. Obviously, I mean, there's parts of where deer live that are way more open, and being 15 yards away, which is very standard across, you know, a lot of where whitetails live. But you're not going to get that close to a deer. You just can't, you know, or there's situations where the deer really is not paying attention, and they might be a little bit further away, and there's could be reasons, you know. It could be a buck that's focused on another buck and has no care that you're in that tree, or whatever. I mean, you can come up with a million situations, but yes, the thing about their ability to slow down the image, like a really, you know, a Hall of Famer baseball player or whatever, pick your sport. When I heard that and learned that, I was like, man, that's crazy. Just thinking about what that means. And like one of the things that I try to do now, it's not as easy, but I mean, even the movement that I do when I'm hunting, when I'm pretty sure deer are not around, I try to slow that down. You know, just like if I'm going to reach for my water bottle or scratch my nose or look at my phone or whatever, I try to, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I try to be like, okay, just don't do it at normal speed. You know, just try to act like you're in molasses and just slowly reach for whatever you're trying to grab or whatever. We do that, I think, for the most part, hunters do that when the situation's about to happen. You know, deer's coming, you turn that on where you're like, okay, I need to get my bow. And so you're not just reaching it and grabbing it. You're slowly, if you've been busted enough times, you know what's going to happen, right? So you slowly reach for it. I try to do that whenever I'm hunting. It's hard, but I still get busted though.
Yeah, I try to do that until like the sun starts to sit and, you know, prime time, and all of a sudden you get that little those mosquitoes start coming out, and then I look like I'm airboxing up there. Like that's one thing I cannot go is those dang mosquitoes.
It's funny. The one of the things my uncle taught me when I first started hunting was I used to whip my head around real quick and to look at things. Like, you're like right there, like where? You know, that's like your first instinct.
Yeah.
He told me to like use your eyes to look at things, not the motion of your head. And so like I'll find myself like looking out of the corner of my eye so much it like makes me want to feel cross-eyed as I'm going slow. That has helped me not move as much, I feel like.
That's a good tip. And that's coming from somebody that knows what they're talking about. Your eyes, they're not going to pick up movement on your eyes as easily as your head turning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, magic. I just had a little quick question back to like that little head bobbing scenario, like whenever they pick you off. So there's a little, or I guess an old wives tale that I kind of heard about. Like, do deer know or can deer see like your eyes within the stand? Because like there's some people that swear like if you look a deer in the eyes, they're automatically going to bust. And then some have the, like that squint and tip, you know, the part of your bill down. And then others just basically close their eyes and say a little prayer or whatever you do. But is there any rhyme or reason to that? Or is that just a big old myth?
I think it's a myth. I mean, I've locked eye contact with deer plenty of times where they, as long as I don't move, I think they're looking at the bigger object in the tree or, you know, behind the tree or on the wall or where, you know, wherever you are, because of that visual acuity that I mentioned, the 20/60 vision. You know, I mean, if they're 60 feet away, which is not that far away, it's pretty blurry. You're not picking up a pupil of somebody. You know, think about like what you're looking at. If I'm 60 feet away from you, you can see the eyes, but they're looking for your arm to move or your, you know, your torso. That's what they're really looking for. So in my opinion, and based on the research, I don't think that that's going to have, unless you're like 3 yards away, then that might be possible, or like 5 yards, you know, but I don't think in a normal hunting circumstance, a deer 20, 30 yards away, 40 yards away, they're picking up your eyes or your eye, you know, your pupil moving back and forth or whatever. Or even if you're just locked on them.
Mm-hmm. If I'm 5 yards away, they're going to have to lock eyes through the peep sight because I'm hopefully in full draw at that point.
Yeah.
Too late.
So you've seen a lot of these, or I've been in a lot of these situations where a deer seems like completely turned around or head completely in the grass and they still catch that movement. I know we talked about a little bit about the field of vision, but how big of a role does their eye position play in their field of view? And what is their field of view actually like in degrees? I think everybody knows a perfect circle is 360. Out of that, what can they see?
They can see about 300 degrees. Their eyes are on the side of their head, like a horse or, you know, a dog is kind of more forward facing. Ours is more forward facing, more predator prey type relationship. So like anything that's a prey animal is going to want to have the biggest field of view as possible, you know, as big of a circle as possible. So because their eyes are positioned on the side of their head instead of the front, like ours, deer have a very large field of vision, 300 degrees or so. Ours is about 180. So there's only 60 degrees directly behind them that is like a dead space. And that is why they're the size of their ears and the mobility of their ears is so important, is because their hearing, and you probably talk to somebody else about their hearing, but their hearing is not all that different than ours in terms of what decibels they can hear and how far away they can hear. But the fact that, like, if a deer is facing directly away from you and you're in that 60 degree pocket of dead space, they're typically rotating their ears pretty often to pick up whatever is in that dead space. They're not pinned back there, but you've seen a deer's ears, right? And they're just constantly rotating them, moving them. Every couple seconds, they're checking that dead space to see if they can hear anything.
It's so weird when I see it, when a deer comes in and they're just like, I can't move my ears at all unless I smile or something. Like, that's hilarious that they can do that.
Yeah. It's like a little satellite, you know, like they're just constantly trying to pick up the best signal. And that's what they're doing. They're scanning for sound. Something that doesn't sound like it should be there.
So from the field of view perspective, obviously you're going to want to, the best shot on a deer's typically going to be broadside. And I guess secondarily, I take quartering away over quartering two. But with that in mind and envision in mind, when is the best time to draw your bow when you have a deer close? Is it with head down, head up? Do you wait for them to look away? Obviously you think that would be best, but from a vision perspective, when is the best time to do that, do you think?
Obviously, even if they're slightly quartering away, you're still in the 300 degrees. You'd have to have a deer facing directly away from you. I personally have never, I mean, I'm trying to position myself where you put yourself in the best place with shot distance, angle, but it doesn't always go that way. If you live in a place or hunt in a place that has a decent amount of tree cover or just cover, and you can position a stand for the deer to have its head behind some physical object, then you're 100% guaranteed. But that is in my kind of just me going through the process of when I'm going to take a shot. That's on the list, but it's not high on the list. You know, I want the deer to be steady, standing still. I'd rather not shoot at one that's moving. I want it to be within my effective range. I do like broadside or quartering away, as you mentioned. And if I can stop the deer, but its head is still in a direction that I think it could potentially see me, if all things are all equal and I feel like the advantage is there, I'm still taking the shot. I'm not worrying about the fact that it can see me. Even though Jake asked me, can they watch that arrow flying? I think they probably can. But I'm not going to, you know, give a chip shot up because the deer can potentially see me. It's hard, right? You know, like going through the checklist of...
That's what's cool about it, though.
Yeah, it is cool. Just being like, what's right in this? And sometimes it's innate where you're like, you know, now's the time to shoot, but
it's a good time.
Yeah.
So if with the motion in mind, if you're going to have to draw from an exposed position, it sounds like it'd be best to do it slowly.
If you can. I mean, and that's also not easy, but yes, it is one of the things that I try to do is draw as a deer's coming in. When I'm pretty sure, like if it's even like 40, 50 yards out, we have a lot of trees in the Northeast, right? So if a deer is coming in and I'm like, it is on a trail and it's going to be in front of me, I will sometimes try to draw when I'm more confident that it can't see because its head is behind an object, and just wait it out and just hold that bow back long enough that when it gets there, I'm not trying to draw. You know, that is going to be the biggest in terms of bow hunting anyway. Obviously, people are listening to this that might be rifle hunters or muzzle loader hunters, and you can get away with a little less movement, obviously, because trying to bring that firearm up to your shoulder isn't taking quite the same amount of motion as pulling back a bow. But I'm thinking about that several steps ahead where that is going to get attention. And so I'm going to pull my bow back early. If I can hold it, and if I, you know, based on the pace of the animal, and like Jake said, it's cool. Like you're rolling dice on everything. You're just trying to get yourself in a position and be there so the deer doesn't bust you.
Yeah, for sure. I did want to pivot a little bit to talk about hunting in a stand. I know we talked about height earlier, but from a vision perspective, when you're picking a tree stand, what are some of the non-negotiables, you know, maybe you're setting it up beforehand for you? Like we talked about height a little bit, but what's cover? What is foliage? How does that interact with vision? How can we kind of set ourselves up for success when picking a stand?
I like, I like a tree that is, or, you know, when you're trying to pick out something, the selection criteria I go through is it in a spot where, as the deer is moving on the trail or trails that, I expect the deer to come through, is not only the right distance, but also off the trail enough that as the deer is walking, or deer, multiple deer walking, it's not going to be directly in front of their field of vision. Although it might be off to the side a little bit. I'm trying to find something where it is not going to be more likely that they're going to see you just because they're walking and you're tend to be, you know, within easy eyesight of it. I do like multiple, multiple lead or multiple trunked trees. Mm-hmm. Or in my situation up in the Northeast, I like to try to find hard, good sized trees that actually have some coniferous mid story trees around it. Something that's got, cedars, hemlock, those kinds of things, because that's evergreen present. It's going to be there and it provides some of that back cover. But everybody that hunts doesn't have that as an option, especially at 15 to 16 to 20 feet in height. You know, you might be in a pure hardwood stand and there's no coniferous trees available. And in those situations, I certainly don't want to be in a stick, like a tree that has nothing on it. And so trying to find something that has multiple trunks to it where you can, or might be two or three trees that are growing out of the same pocket and you can use another trees for either one that's either in front or behind you. So placement of the stand too, I might sometimes, if I don't hunt out of a saddle, but you obviously have that flexibility with a saddle much more than a lock on or a ladder even. But you don't necessarily have to be on the front of the tree, even though that might be the best shot. A lot of times I'll put that, put the stand at either 3 or 9 o'clock, on the tree. So if 6 o'clock was exactly where I expected the deer, I kind of want to be on the back edge of the tree and catch them coming or going if possible.
We hunt a place with a lot of pines and it's like, there is no cover 20 feet up. I mean, it's just like a straight pencil all the way up and every tree is like that. And it's like, you get in the tree and you're like, I try to hide behind the tree in my saddle from where I think they're going to come from. It's like the only cover I have.
Yeah.
That, and in some areas it's pretty hilly. And so you could be, like you said, 20, 25 feet up in a tree. And then you just look over and it's just like, oh,
eye level.
I could be eye level with one of them.
Yeah. Have you guys ever tried to put, bring some kind of cover up into the tree with you? And it could be artificial, but just like cutting limbs and trying to, stick limbs in the bottom of, obviously you're not going to do this in a saddle, but or even strap them to the tree so they're kind of dangled behind you. I've seen some people doing that where they'll almost turkey fan out a couple of limbs behind the tree. I mean, that seems like an option, but what do you guys do in those situations where you have lots of pine?
We hunt public land. That's where that stuff is. Yeah. So there's no cutting trees, no drilling into trees. So you kind of try to find an oak or something around, but once all the leaves go, it's like, well, same situation again. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something to say too about, hunting tactic based on the time of the season. You can get away with, this is probably obvious for a lot of listeners, but maybe not everybody, you can get away with a lot more in the peak of the rut because they are not going to be looking for danger as often as they would in the pre-rut or post-rut, just because their focus is really more on breeding or preventing from getting bred if you're a doe and they're not ready. And most of the distraction is going to be from another deer. And that's constant for a couple weeks. And so some of those locations that you're talking about where you don't have the back cover, you don't have the ability to change that, and they may be some of your best spots, you can get away with more because they're focused on either chasing or being chased by another deer, not necessarily what's going on. And even with smell, honestly, they may smell you, but it's a fleeting thing, a fleeting sense of danger because there's a buck right on their tail that's chasing them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and this is one of our favorite places to hunt in the rut. So I think they throw a lot of the caution out the window, which is pretty nice. I did want to ask you about hunting on the ground. It sounds like from a visual perspective, it would be pretty tough to hunt deer on the ground. Not impossible, but tough just because the way that the peripheral, their field of view is set up. Like you said, all the predators coming from the ground. Does it make it tougher when you're hunting on the ground?
It does. I would definitely not shy away from it. I've actually tried to hunt more on the ground as I've gotten older, just because I'm toting kids along or, you know, trying to take some new hunter out through our Field of Fork program. And I still love being in a tree and do that every year. But I've hunted more on the ground than I ever have the last 3 or 4 years. I think care needs to be taken if you're going to hunt on the ground. Certainly you could use a pop-up blind. Deer are going to pick up on that being different in the environment, but it does provide that back cover, especially if they get used to it. But if you're hunting public land, you're not going to leave a pop-up blind out on public land and leave it there, right? So it's going to be this new thing in the environment that deer are coming up to. But I also think I've shot deer without a blind off from the ground during the rut, just because they were running by and I shouldn't say deer multiple, but I have been able to shoot a buck on the ground while just being opportunistic walking in. It was coming through. I stopped it and shot it, and I was on the ground with no blind or anything. That's not impossible. Yeah.
I shot my first deer on the ground this last season, hidden behind like a little cluster of rocks and a telephone pole. Yeah. And I kind of just popped up from behind it and shot. I was like, if you took me out here 3 years ago and were like, you're going to kill a deer behind a rock in an open field, I'd be like, there's no way. Yeah. And it works. It's crazy that you can do that in certain scenarios.
It is a thrilling way to hunt. It's also kind of freeing, especially because of all the gear we tote with us.
Yeah.
Right. And just to feel like, you know, I don't really even need all that stuff. You know, you just make sure you have a license and you have a something to shoot a deer with and something to gut it, hopefully if you get one, and go a little bit more rogue or, you know, stripped down in terms of what you really need. But I think you do need to care, you know, take a lot more care. I shouldn't say a lot more care. I'm just going to say I'm more cognizant of my movement, my scent, all of that stuff when I'm on the ground. I almost want to say, I think we have false expectations or false hope even when we hunt out of a tree that deer can't feel or smell or see the same things that when you're on the ground. They still can. You know, I don't think there's a height of that you can get in a tree where they're not going to pick you up. As I mentioned earlier, I think that the risk goes down, but it doesn't go to zero. And no matter how high you go. And I think it gives us a false sense of security when we're in a tree. Like, oh, they can't see me up here.
So speaking of the false sense of security, I want to kind of morph that into things about camo, right? Because people buy camo to, quote unquote, like blend in to the surroundings and stuff like that. Is there actually a difference between like one camo or the other? Do deer perceive them differently?
I think there are some differences, and this isn't like a commercial. I think, you know, for me, and for what the research says, deer are not picking up on the finer detail, right? We just talked about that. They're 20/60. Yeah. They don't have this super sharp vision. And so camouflage that has super fine detail printed in it, I think is more for us than it is for deer.
Looks cool.
Right?
Yeah.
It's those broader patterns, the bigger kind of like at the macro scale. And there's some old school camo that isn't even produced, or there's some stuff out there that's produced now that you just don't see it. It's not mainstream as often, that has bigger blotches or bigger swaths of color versus the finer, finer detail. I mean, you could buy camouflage today that has, you know, the veins in a leaf in it. You know, you can like see it really close, right? Deer can't see that stuff. They really can't. So I do think camouflage helps. I think there's differences in some of the camouflage. But, you know, deer also, they see UV. I think you got to pay attention to that. And I think earth tones are just fine. Honestly, if you don't have camouflage, but you have the ability to put on something that has, keeps you warm and dry, it's not carrying the scent of a campfire. You know, I've taken a bunch of new people out that have wanted to learn to hunt that might have technical gear for like camping. But if you show up in your jacket, even though it can keep you warm and dry, and instead of being, you know, blue, it's a red or an orange, which they can't see, or it's an earth tone, but it smells like campfire smoke because you wore it the previous weekend at while camping. That's a problem because they're going to smell that. You know, so that's kind of a long way of going around the camouflage question, but I do think it helps because it breaks up your outline. Mm-hmm. But I think it's those bigger, broader patterns that are more important than the finer detail.
That's interesting. That makes sense. Some of my favorite, you know, hunting gear that I have is like a really dark chocolate pair of pants, and then I have like a khaki bino harness that like takes up a lot of my chest.
Yeah,
and it sounds like those things are okay, right? Because they're not big red flags or yellow flags in this sense to a deer, but there is something to say about the foliage and the breakup and kind of blending into something else with the camo pattern.
Yeah, exactly. I wear one of my favorite pieces of hunting gear. I have some really nice technical camo from companies that have sponsored in the past and companies that sponsor us now. And so, you know, we represent those brands, but one of my favorite pieces is a camo as a, like a chocolate brown cotton hoodie.
Yeah.
And I'll throw a vest on top of it. I mean, it's cotton. It's not even like technical gear, but it's just a hoodie that is really comfortable and it's warm. And then I'll put one of my camo vests on top of it, but my arms are brown.
Yeah.
They're not camouflage. I actually feel like that's a really good way to kind of break up my outline even more.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know we're short on time, and we had a couple fun questions before we let you go.
Sounds good.
So bringing all this full circle, we talked a ton about deer vision today. If you had to give deer hunters three tips on how to beat, or at least try to beat a deer sense of vision, what would those three things be?
First thing would be don't move. Second thing is, don't wear anything that has blue or UV, you know, high UV, kind of detergents in it, but definitely don't wear blues. Don't wear anything in the yellows, or even kind of like purples. You can definitely wear blaze orange. I'm going to give you four because, if it's firearm season, wear blaze orange. It's not going to stick you out. And then the last one would be how about don't move again?
I like
don't
it.
Move so, gets two votes. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So if you could take away one deer sense forever to help you kill more deer, what would that be? And I know you kind of already hinted on in the beginning, but
sense of smell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's the best thing they got.
That's understandable.
And how many more deer you think we'd kill if they couldn't smell? I think about the turkeys. I kill a lot of turkeys because they can't smell. I would never kill a turkey if they could smell.
It's their sense of smell. That's the winner.
That's awesome. Well, cool. We really appreciate you coming on. For folks that maybe want to connect with you or become a member of the National Deer Association, like I am, proud member, got the sticker on the truck. Where can they connect with you? Where can they become a member?
So you can find us at deerassociation.com. That's just one word. You can find my information on our website, under the staff page. I'm listed there along with a bunch of my coworkers, really great folks. You can follow me on Instagram. Just, I think it's MattRoss_NDA. It's the only social media platform I have, but I'm pretty active on it. And you can email me if you have any questions about Deer Vision or anything, just matt@deerassociation.com. And that's actually true for all of our employees, first name at Deer Association. So if you want to talk to Kip, it's just kip@deerassociation.com, or Nick Pinizzato, our CEO, Nick at Deer Association. So you can reach out to any of us. We're very approachable. We love to hear hunting stories. We love to see pictures. And we love to get questions from our members or people that are interested in becoming members. Awesome. Super accessible.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you. Did you learn anything about Deer Vision?
Dude, it made me realize how much of a disadvantage we're actually at when we're going into their element, their house. We're in a big disadvantage. And like that made me realize, like I think the biggest thing from the episode was like when they looked down, I kind of figured there was something always wonky going on, like not necessarily with their eyes, but like they were still like on point, like with all the vision stuff. But whenever he was explaining how their eyes just rotated as they went to feed, and it's just like, I thought I was supposed to shoot them while they were busy, not, you know, I don't know.
I like that they're, I knew this, but to some extent, but I think Matt reiterated on it quite a bit, is the, like, their vision's pretty bad in terms of like quality.
See, I didn't really know that.
Yeah, that makes me feel good, but it's like nature's sick joke, right? Their quality of vision sucks, but they perceive it four times faster. So you're like, you can't see me, but then you do that and they're like, got him. I don't know what he is, but I got him.
They might suck, but they stuck really good.
Yeah. It's like they catch you. They don't know what you are, but they're not going to stick around to find out. So
something I'm so amazed with is, like, obviously I haven't been on for like Kip Adams or anything like that, but I've listened to other people like Bronson Strickland, you know, on his Deer Lab podcast and stuff like that. And hearing Matt talk and explain stuff, they, like, especially from the people from, like, I know Bronson that does, I don't think, like, doesn't work for NDA, but from a lot of the NDA folks, like, they explain stuff so well. Like, they're able to put it into terms that you can, like the average simple-minded person like myself can just easily absorb. And, like, as he was talking, I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is, like, talking about complex stuff, but he's making me understand it. And, like, I love that. He did a really good job.
Those folks are very down to earth, very, if they were smart, they would just keep all their research and knowledge to themselves and just kill big deer all the time and not tell anyone else. I think they're making people a heck of a lot more effective going out. Like, just few topics that he threw out, I'm like, okay, I could do this a little bit better. I could do that a little bit better. And as we know, those little things are really what add up to be you killing one or not.
And how easily he explains it. Like, that's how you know he knows his stuff, because you can't explain something that thorough and like that simplistic without absolutely knowing it through and through.
So with that, we will catch you guys in the Deer Science Month, week 3, next week. See you later.
Jesus loves you.
Thank you guys so much for checking out the Hunter's Advantage podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you in the next episode.